The following views and opinions do not necessarily reflect those of Talk 1230 WYTS, its staff, management, or parent company, Clear Channel. Listeners should not use Dr. Kvitko's comments and advice in place of receiving an actual dental exam. Time now for Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS with Dr. Brian Kvitko. Call 821-1230. That's 821-1230 to discuss your dental issues. Now here's Dr. Kvitko on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Talk 1230 WYTS. Welcome to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry but were too numb to ask. Hello, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko. Thank you for spending your morning with us. It's another beautiful day out there. So after the show, feel free to get out there or make sure you get out there and enjoy it. Maybe some golf or who knows what. But today, we're going to be talking about dental insurance. We're kind of calling this Dental Insurance Part 3. For those of you that tuned in the last couple weeks, you know that we talked about all of the different aspects of dental insurance, the kinds of things that affect people when they go to the dentist and how it affects their pocketbook, and actually the quality of care that they receive, that you receive. So this week, we're going to expand on that topic a little bit, and this week we're going to look at dentistry and dental insurance from the Canadian perspective. I just spent a week in Canada. Some of you know I was actually born in Canada, but only lived there for the first few years of my life, but do have relatives in Toronto. And last year, my wife and I went to Montreal and had a wonderful time. This past week, we went to Quebec City, beautiful city, and we had a great time there. I also visited a couple dental offices in Canada to try to get an idea of the differences or the similarities, if you will, of dentists and dentistry between the two countries. So with us on the phone here soon is going to be the Vice President of the Canadian Dental Association, a Canadian dentist himself, Dr. Ronald G. Smith. We'll get to Dr. Smith here in just a moment. He is in British Columbia, which is north of California, therefore it's only 6 in the morning there, and we want to thank him in advance for getting up so early and being willing to be on the air with us. What I want to do is my housekeeping and the kinds of things that we talk about each beginning, and what it is the golf outing. I want everybody to know about the golf outing that we're doing. The golf outing is going to be on August 23rd. It is at, the second annual Dr. Kvitko Golf Classic for the benefit of the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio. It's at Broadview Golf Course on Headley Mill Road in Pataskala. Starts at 8 a.m. Foursomes are $140. And if you only have two golfers, that's fine. We'll pair you up with another two. And for that cost, you'll receive your round of golf and a couple free drink tickets. All right, so we encourage you to come out, have a fun day of golf with us. It's not that competitive. It's mostly just to have fun, raise money for the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio. Also, one of the prizes we'll be giving away, the main prize, I guess, or grand prize, if you will, is breakfast and a behind-the-scenes studio tour of with Dino Tripodis and Sean Ireland. So that's the grand prize. And those tickets, though, you don't have to be a golfer to be entered into that. You just have to send $5 for a raffle ticket, and you can obtain those by calling the office, my office, at 262-9588. So we're going to, let me think, is there anything else? Nope, I think that, oh, I know. Any caller to the show today, callers that have questions or comments, and our number, by the way, is 821-1230. Anybody that calls in will automatically be registered for that grand prize. And Honestly, what I'm going to do is I will make the $5 donation to the Down Syndrome Association on your behalf. So it's free for you, but the Down Syndrome Association will still get the funding that we are trying to secure for them. All right, now, we're having a little bit of technical difficulty as far as getting Dr. Smith on the phone. So what I'm going to do is kind of give you the benefit of the knowledge that I gained while I was in Canada this last week. And what I found was, when I went to these dental offices, I found they were very modern. I found that they were just like a dental office in the United States. The quality of care, the level of expertise, the level of training is very much the same, very similar. I've known several Canadian dentists, and honestly, you wouldn't know the difference. They're very up on the latest techniques. They have the TV monitors at the dental chairs, just like I do, implants, all of the services that you have come to know and expect from an American dentist, you will find in Canada. But what you won't find is managed care. There is no such thing as managed care in the Canadian dental system. Now, also, you'll find that the health insurance programs that Canadians have do not include a dental component. So the vast majority then of Canadians do not have government-backed dental insurance. There is private dental insurance available. And in fact, our question of the day is, almost forgot that, didn't I? As of 2007, in 2007, Dr. Kvitko's question of the day is, what percent of the Canadians had private dental insurance coverage to some extent? What percent of Canadians had private dental insurance coverage to some extent in 2007? Okay? So we will give the answer to that later in the show. We'll also take your guesses at 821-1230. And also, you can email us your guesses to Dentally Speaking on talk1230@yahoo.com. All right, so feel free to send us an email with your guess. Also, feel free to give us a call. If you have any questions or comments, you can call that number as well, the number being 821-1230. All right, so when we left off last week, we were talking about the different types of dental insurance plans, PPO, preferred provider option, HMO or DMO, which stands for Dental Maintenance Organization, kind of a takeoff on Health Maintenance Organization. And then we had your traditional plans. So what I found was that, and I had some discussions with Dr. Smith, and I understand we do have him on the phone now, so we're going to get to Dr. Smith here in just a second. In fact, let me go ahead and introduce Dr. Ronald Smith. He has a, his resume is very, very impressive, and he is the vice president, current vice president of the Canadian Dental Association. He has been practicing dentistry since 1974, received his Bachelor of Science in the University of Alberta in 1972, and his Doctor of Dental Surgery in the University of Alberta in 1974. This is just so impressive, Dr. Smith. He was class president, treasurer of his Dental Undergraduate Society, just very, very involved in dentistry, loves what he does. It's just, I could go on and on, and I'm just so in awe of this resume. Dr. Smith, I want to welcome you to the show. Thank you for getting up so early.
Well, you're welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. We were talking a little bit about, you and I spoke a little bit off the air about the differences between the dental Canadian the system in Canada and the one here in the U.S. And one of the things you mentioned to me was that there is no managed care in Canada. And the other thing that we were talking about was how dental insurance, there is no, maybe I understood this wrong, but, well, let me just ask you, not that you know the American system, but could you explain the Canadian system for me? For example, people with private insurance, are there PPO or preferred provider networks? Is it strictly you have insurance and your insurance pays for this or that and that's it? Are you asked to be on lists that ask you to take 40% discounts and that sort of thing?
Actually, in Canada, there are no preferred provider organizations for dentistry. And the types of insurance that we have are private in nature. There are essentially three types. There are those that are supplied by what would be called a conventional insurance company, but those are more like life insurance companies that sell a dental insurance plan. Names, I'm not sure if they're familiar to you, but they're like Manulife and Sun Life are life insurance companies that do sell dental insurance plans. The second one, and one of the larger ones probably in the country, are called Administrative Service Organizations, or ASOs. And those are organized along the lines of they have a plan, and there are various levels of plans, but essentially there are plans, and what the ASO does is they charge a fee, so it's kind of cost plus, and that fee is used to administer the plan and to pay the staff and that sort of thing.
So
they're not large, profitable organizations.
So you wouldn't find a dental insurance company that's worth $50 billion in the in Canada then?
Not in the dental insurance business, that's for sure.
Okay. Because I told a story on the air last week about how one insurance company right here in Columbus actually was purchased by another. United Healthcare purchased a company called Physicians Health Plan. And the outgoing CEO of Physicians Health Plan received $33 million golden parachute. Is that something that would happen in Canada? Or?
Well, it certainly wouldn't happen with the ASOs because they just don't have that kind of money. The other, as far as Manulife or one of the life insurance companies that sell it, I suppose something along those lines could happen, but it wouldn't be due to the dental insurance.
Okay.
More of a life insurance issue.
So basically, as I'm hearing, the biggest difference between dental insurance in Canada and the United States is the insurance companies are strictly collecting an administrative fee for the work that they do. They're not profiting handsomely by doing it. They receive a certain amount to cover their employees, their staffing, their physical plant, the building they need to rent, and that sort of thing. Would that be correct?
The bulk of them are like that. There's a group called the Blues. For example, where I live on the West Coast is the Pacific Blue, and they operate strictly that way. They're all, those are across Canada, and they operate the same way. There are, like I said, some other forms of insurance as life insurance, et cetera. One of the common things I hear about when I'm visiting the United States and at dental meetings is that there's some sort of concept that there's a lot of publicly funded dentistry. There really isn't. It's probably less than 5% of all the dentistry or all the money spent on dentistry comes from public funding. So that's a whole other issue, but it's a very small part of the program.
I see. Dr. Smith, we need to go to a break, so I appreciate you hanging with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Make you smile, please stay for a while now. Just take your time wherever you go.
Talk 1230 WYTS. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Today, on the phone with us is Dr. Ronald Smith. He is a dentist in British Columbia. He is the vice president of the Canadian Dental Association, and he's helping us understand the differences between the U.S. system and the Canadian system, because as you know, over my last couple shows, I feel like the U.S. system has some serious flaws, things that I don't think even patients quite grasp. And so, Dr. Smith, do you feel like the Canadian system is a good system? It's conducive to Canadians receiving good dental health?
Well, I think it's by and large a very fair system. The ASOs that run the bulk of these programs are quite fair to the patient. I think they're fair to the dentist who has provided the treatment. And it seems to be a system that works well. It's generally, they were developed out of with the help of unions many, many years ago, and I guess they saw that this is the way they would like to operate their dental plans, and they've kind of grew out of that, as I understand it. And I think it's become a good model, because there are no huge profits being taken out of it, and the money that is used is basically used for dental care, plus a small administrative fee that allows them to operate the dental plan.
We have a plan or a system in the United States that I know the Dental Society proposes, which is direct reimbursement, or DR, where the employer actually just simply pays a portion of the dental bill, or up to a certain dollar amount for each employee, and it essentially cuts out that profit that the insurance companies tend to garner, and it sounds like that's the system that you're using in Canada.
Well, it's a little bit different than that, in that there is an organization that administers the plan. In the DRs, at least as I understand them, that's directly between the employer and the patient and the dentist providing the service, which cuts out even more and is certainly... that's where you get the most bang for your buck, if you like, with your dental dollar.
As an employer, you get the most bang for your buck for your employees if you just use direct reimbursement.
And the employee gets the best deal for themselves, because none of the money is being used in administration or profits.
Yeah, that sounds actually really good. So we have direct reimbursement, similar to the ASO, with less of an administrative fee. Is there a plan in Canada that, and I know you mentioned that you said that the system you have seems to be fair to dentists, and I take that to mean that they're getting enough of a fee that they can pay their bills, they can, enjoy their family and that sort of thing. Is there a system in Canada or one of these plans that says, hey, Dr. So-and-so, we'll only send patients to you if you work at this much of a discount? Is that ever being asked of you guys?
About 15 years ago, and I'm guessing a little bit on the date, there was an attempt to start up that preferred provider plan, and it wasn't successful. It didn't survive, and it's gone away, and it's never raised its head again. I think that a lot of the preferred provider, if I understand it, and I'm now speaking about the system in the United States, and not my area of expertise, but a lot of the dental plans, the preferred provider thing, comes out of what were originally or essentially medical plans, and dental plans were kind of tacked on to that system as part of a plan, and I think that's kind of where a lot of the preferred provider system came from. In Canada, where we have a national health program, people sometimes call it socialized medical plan, there are no large medical plans to sort of tack on to. So the preferred provider programs for dentistry have to stand alone, and they figured out that it's not going to work very well for them here.
I see. Well, that would be wonderful if we'd figure that out here, because I know that I recently took my name off of the preferred provider list of one of the local plans, Delta Dental, and I just decided that in order to do the job right, to do the right thing for the patients, and to be able to sleep well at night, I could not take the shortcuts I was being asked to take, and I just said, I'm not going to do it. And not that those people still can't come to my office, it's just that some of them have chosen to leave because they feel like I should be on that list, that it's going to save them money, and I can't seem to get it through to some of them that they're really better off going to someone not on the list than someone on the list because of the shortcuts that you would be tempted or almost forced to, in some cases, to take.
Well, it becomes a quality of care issue, and I know that I personally have chosen that what's important to me is that that I am giving the highest quality of care that I can to provide for my patients, and that allows me to feel good about what I do and allows me to sleep well at night knowing that I've done my best for all of my patients. And if a third party comes between myself and my patient and tries to dictate treatment, in my experience, the treatment that they try to dictate is of lesser quality than I feel is appropriate for the dentist, and that's why I don't want to be stuck in that position.
Yes, I totally agree, and actually I want to expand on that just a little bit when we come back from this next break. If you can hang on with us, I think you can.
Is that
okay? Great. I appreciate that. You're listening to Talk 1230 WYTS, Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. We'll be right back. Talk 1230 WYTS. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Good morning. I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko, and my guest on the show today and on the phone from British Columbia, Canada, is Dr. Ronald Smith. Before we get back to Dr. Smith, though, I want to give somebody called in, Tanisha called in her guest to the question of the day. I don't even know if Dr. Smith heard the question of the day because we were having some technical difficulties, but the question of the day is, in 2007, what percent of Canadians had private dental insurance coverage to some extent? Tanisha called in a guess of 32%, and that's a little bit low, Tanisha, but I do appreciate your call. Dr. Smith, we were talking about the quality of care issue, and you really struck a chord with me because I am all about making sure that I provide the absolute best care that is available, and do not want to take a shortcut in any way, shape, or form. In fact, my morals would not allow me to do it anyway, and if I were forced to, I'd probably go bankrupt, to be honest. I do want to ask, though, the Canadian system for people that are down on their luck, and in this country we call it the welfare system, what is the name of your system, and how does that work in the realm of dentistry?
Well, it's pretty much called the same, the social welfare system, and it's for, socially or economically disadvantaged people or possibly disabled individuals. There are some programs that are long-term. Quite a few of them are very short-term or just to help people get through, a bad time, which they can apply for, and they have to qualify for. And by and large, it covers what I would call emergency treatment to take care of pain, essentially. And there's, that part of it. There are some people who are, for example, disabled and unable to take care of themselves who have a longer-term plan. Again, they're fairly limited, but they will take care of basics.
Now, what I'm hearing, I believe, is a nuance between your system and ours, which is it sounds like the Canadian system is primarily a stopgap system while someone is either down on their luck, and it's a short-term coverage until they get back on their feet, get a job, whatever, but that there's also this safety net for people that are, I would say there are some folks, who would need lifetime help, maybe a mentally retarded individual, someone who is very disabled, whether it be some type of a debilitating medical disease, maybe an amputee who is not able to be gainfully employed, or at least limited as far as gainful employment. But that it's not necessarily, the Canadian system is not necessarily a lifetime dental insurance, if you will.
Well, it's not intended to be. There are some cases that would qualify and probably would have some long-term coverage cases, as you outlined. By and large, it's to just help people through an emergency situation short term.
Yeah, I think that in this country we have, our system has somehow gotten skewed in a way that people think of it as dental insurance, and they somehow managed to stay on the system for a lot longer than I think it was intended when Congress passed ours, I believe, back in 1964-65, our welfare system. Obviously, there are people that need some help, but I don't know, if people start taking advantage of it, then it makes us all a little uneasy.
Well, we have some similar situations like that. There are people who seem to want to just take advantage of that whole social program, as in not only dental, but all the other benefits that they get from it. And unfortunately, there are those who prefer to work within that system, I guess, and sometimes don't try very hard to get themselves off that system. And that's always an issue. And whenever you have a social program, I believe it'll always be an issue. There are some who seem to prefer that.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it's just something. In some cases, for some folks, it's just easier to do that. Now, things like, I noticed that one of your areas of interest, specialty, if you will, is implantology. And so you place implants, restore implants, I'm assuming. And are you finding your Canadian citizens open to that? Is it something that, I mean, let's put it this way. Do you have a lot of people coming to the office saying, gee, are implants covered? Because if they're not, I don't want them. You don't really have to deal with that, do you?
Well, implants are not covered.
Okay.
Under the, as far as I know, no insurance companies who are covering implants. So it's a, it's part of, that part of my practice, and it's not my entire practice by any means, but that part of the practice is strictly, they're on their own in terms of paying for it.
Now, just from one dentist to another, you know as well as I do that there have been implants in humans, dental implants in humans, since the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
That would be 30 years.
Yep.
And insurance companies are still claiming that they are, quote, investigational.
Yes.
That's their word. They don't use experimental, but investigational. We use the same materials that you might implant a knee or a hip, the titanium. Why do you think it is that insurance companies have been able to get away with not covering implants for 30 years?
Well, I'm not sure why they've gotten away with it. I guess there hasn't been enough demand or push from, at least in our system, from, let's say, the user groups, the unions and that sort of thing need to push a lot harder to get that covered. What the insurance companies do, or even the ASOs, will come back and say, well, you know, the cost is prohibitive and it'll drive your plan costs way up. And so, therefore, you know, we don't want to cover that. So it becomes strictly a dollar factor, even though scientifically it's already proven, and it's, you know, we're doing it every week, and there are millions of these implants being put in around the world every week, and somehow they've managed to avoid providing any coverage in this area.
Yeah, I was reading a report that said for every dollar spent on prevention for dental care, you save $4 in the cost of future dental care, and that that number may be higher now. And again, from dentist to dentist, we both know that if you are missing one tooth and you can place an implant there instead of trimming down the adjacent two teeth, virgin teeth, to do a bridge, you've saved those teeth for possibly keeping them virgin teeth for the rest of that patient's life rather than opening them up to other things. So it does seem a little bit short-sighted that they're still resisting to pay for these things.
Well, as you outlined, that's absolutely correct. I mean, if I was in the situation myself where maybe I lost a tooth for a trauma, or, you know, riding my bike and banged my front teeth and lost a tooth, I mean, I wouldn't even consider cutting down the adjacent teeth. It would be, you know, for me, it would be implants, because I would want to preserve the adjacent teeth in their usual fashion. So But I think it just comes down to dollars. They just don't want to pay for it, and it's you know, it would be a huge cost for them, or at least that's how they view it.
Right.
And they just don't want to pay for it.
Now, when we come back from our break, and we do have to go to one right now, what I want to ask you about, I want to ask you about yearly maximums, that sort of thing, even if you have them in Canada. So please hang with me. You're listening to Talk 1230 WYTS, Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Our phone number is 821-1230. We'll be right back.
Just to
Talk 1230 WYTS, you're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Today our guest on the phone from British Columbia, Canada, is Dr. Ronald Smith. He's the Vice President of the Canadian Dental Association. I really appreciate Dr. Smith being with us today. After all, it is about a quarter till 7 in the morning there. So before we get back with Dr. Smith, I want to... Tony called in a guess of his of our question of the day, Dr. Kvitko's question of the day. The question being... What percent of Canadians have private dental insurance coverage to some extent? And this is as of 2007. And Tony's guess was 72%. That is a little high, Tony, but thank you for your call. And honestly, I think what I'm going to do, because I'm afraid we're going to get so busy with other topics, I'm going to go ahead and give the answer to that question now. And the answer is 63%. Dr. Smith, does that surprise you?
No, I guess being involved in the dental world, both in my practice and politically, I guess, doesn't surprise me. I'm fairly aware of that number.
Yeah, I mean that's a pretty high number. Oh, and before we went to the break, though, I wanted to get into: do the people who have insurance have yearly maximums? So a certain dollar amount that is allowed to be spent on their behalf. Per year?
Yes, they do. And one of my criticisms of these organizations is they never move the... Well, they're very slow to move any limits up.
Right.
So they take advantage of that because if we use orthodontics as an example, a lot of the orthodontic plans will pay 50% of the fee, which all sounds great, except they put a limit on the amount. And so it's 50% of... maybe $4,000. Well, the, you know, $2,000 is that limit for them, or $4,000 on the top end, and that number just never seems to move.
Right.
So they're taking advantage of that by never increasing those limits. And as you know, inflation, you know, 2% inflation is not uncommon, and so a year over year, that number is really eroding the benefit of the plan, and I have some criticism of that.
So basically the level of coverage keeps dropping, even though they wouldn't have you believe that or have the patients understand that.
Well, the way they present it to the patient is completely different, and it's only when the patient is actually going through this that they don't realize the year-over-year problem, because they usually have a one-time or, you know, they will... For example, orthodontics with their children, well, you know, they're only going to experience that probably over, you know, a four-year term, while maybe two of their children are treated, so they don't really notice that.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, if you're putting the bills in and you recognize that you know, 6 or 8 years ago, that was still the number.
Right.
It's now, a lot less today.
What about routine care? What would the yearly maximum be for that in Canada?
Basically, for our basic plans, and the plans are divided into basic and then into crown and bridge type of treatment, and then into usually orthodontics as another program. And they may have some or all of those. But in the basic plans, generally the coverage is quite good. They don't seem to have, they don't have limits on them other than for, once again, for preventive care.
Okay.
And so they may have, you know, they may be able to have two prophylaxis or cleaning a year and so many x-rays and whatever. There usually are some limits on these things.
Right.
Some of them, some of the organizations like the ASOs we talked about are much more generous in that regard.
Okay.
Some of them pay for prophylaxis cleaning examination every 9 months, some of them every 6 months. So there are some variations in there.
Now, if somebody needs fillings, though, let's say they came in, they haven't been to the dentist in a while, they need, I don't know, 3 crowns, a root canal, several fillings, and the bill is going to be, let me just pick a number off the top of my head, of about $6,000. And I'm going to ask you to hold your answer or think about your answer while we go to break. But the question then is, what would happen in that situation? Would there be a yearly maximum that would kick in, keeping that person from getting healthy in this year? So if they came in today and asked me to get them healthy, would I be able to do so in the next 3 or 4 months? Or would I be limited, or would they be limited by whatever their yearly max might be? So please hold your thought and actually formulate your answer. We'll be right back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on Talk 1230 WYTS. Talk 1230 WYTS. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. My guest on the show today is Dr. Ronald G. Smith. He is a dentist in British Columbia. And he is the vice president of the Canadian Dental Association. And before the break, we asked Dr. Smith to answer the question about if somebody stayed away from the dentist for a while, and now they've come in, it's July 6th, and they want to get their mouth healthy, and my treatment plan might add up to about $6,000, would they be limited to only a certain amount of that care in this calendar year, between now and the end of the year? So, Dr. Smith, up in Canada, what would happen in a case like that?
Well, the answer depends quite a bit upon what type of insurance they have. Now, if they're with one of the ASOs, the Administrative Service Organizations, and they are entitled and qualified for the treatment, it would probably be paid for.
Okay.
If they're with some of the life insurance companies and other private insurance companies, there will probably be a limit, and that limit may be, you know, hard to say, but $2,500 or something like that on an annualized basis.
Okay.
Most of them run on a calendar year.
All right.
So what you would end up doing is, for the patient, is examining what their limits are and explaining that to them. And a lot of times what happens in the dental office is that all the basic care will be done.
Right.
So that they're out of pain and all the, you know, the initial problems that they had, and they may have to, if they choose, if they don't want to pay for it themselves, they will forego some of the treatment until they're into the next calendar year.
Now, you know that $2,500 even, which is the most limiting of the two you just mentioned, is 2.5 times what it is here in the United States, which I find very interesting and actually I'm envious, because it's very hard to even get a person out of pain in some cases if they come in with, you know, 4 or 5 teeth in need of endodontic therapy. There's not enough coverage to even get them out of pain.
Yeah, and that's sad. I mean, the patient, the saddest part is that the patient believes that they have coverage.
Yes.
And they really believe that they have this coverage and they should therefore be entitled to the treatment. And it's always sad to have to explain to them that this is the kind of coverage you have and these are the limitations and this is how it works and this is what you would be responsible for. And, you know, they're often quite shocked to find that out, because their understanding of the coverage that they have is not anywhere near what reality is sometimes.
But what I'm also hearing is the vast number of Canadian citizens have that ASO-type coverage, and theirs would most likely, with an approval process, be approved, correct?
Yeah, anybody who's covered under this would, by and large, have the coverage to pay for this.
Wow. That's
maybe on a percentage basis, like the ASOs often, for example, they actually tend to be on the more generous side, but they may have... they may pay 80% of basic, and some of them are quite generous. They pay 80% of everything, including crown and bridge and orthodontics, or 50% on orthodontics, 80% on basic, and maybe 50% on crown and bridge. A lot of them, they're varying plans that the various groups have organized for themselves, and so whatever they're entitled to, they can have.
Wow. Well, Dr. Smith, this has been very enlightening for me, and I know for my listeners. I don't think I've ever heard a dentist in this country use the word generous when referring to a dental insurance company or a dental insurance plan. And keep in mind that I prefaced this whole discussion a week or two ago by saying we need dental insurance companies or insurance companies in general. They do serve a purpose, but yet it seems like they've not kept up to the point where now things are not conducive to good dental care. And I'm trying to, delve into this so that people can understand and maybe make better decisions for their own dental health. So again, thank you very much for getting up and being with us today. We really appreciate your input. Tune in next week and listen in to our next week's topic. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on Talk 1230 WYTS.